This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Friday today. This is actually going to be kind of a normal drive because I'm right next to my major client. My major client across the road from them is a hospital, and that hospital has a senior care clinic in it, and that senior care clinic used to take care of my parents. And so over the process of time, of course, we got to be friends. And so I would just, on costume days, come by and say hello, and we'd cackle and laugh and carry on and go through all the stuff. Well, everything, of course, has been shut down. And so they are trying to figure out, this is one thing that, you know, maybe people don't quite understand, and that is that there is a lot of areas within the medical community, we might have this thought of, oh, well, medicine is essential, and, you know, obviously they're taking care of people, so the, I guess the hospitals are really raking in the dough. But in fact, a lot of elective surgeries are shut down. Hospitals make a lot of money off of elective surgeries. All that stuff's down. There's a whole bunch of other things like, you know, senior healthcare centers and that sort of thing, that they're going to be seeing very few patients. And so the office staff here and the nurses, and you know, they just have a skeleton crew that's coming in. People are out of work. I know one lady who worked in the office here at the medical, for the senior medical center. She's actually doing, I think she's on the phone. She's doing telemarketing. She's gotten another part-time job because she's just not getting that many hours. So, you know, it's crazy times, crazy times, difficult times, but we're going to get through this. Step at a time, we're going to get through this. So anyways, I said all that to say that there's a 20-minute ride home, so this is going to be about quote-unquote normal. Because, when was it? For Easter? I think it was for Easter. I had done my normal videos, and one of the ladies from the Cox Senior Health Center, she wrote me, and I mentioned that last week. She wrote me, and she said, we miss seeing you, and I said, well, I miss seeing you, too. So, went by, just stood outside the window, so came by today, stood outside the window. I'm actually shopping both for my wife and I, and also for my mother-in-law at this point. So that takes a little extra time. So by the time I get all that done and jabber at everybody in Walmart, it's like 10:30, and I had a couple other stops I needed to make anyways. So by the time I got those done, got some banking done, it was already a 11:45. And so I thought, well, shoot, I'm just going to run by and see my friends. And they only had two people on today. So last week there was like five. This week they only have two on. It's difficult. It's difficult. But we're going to get through this. Things are going fine at work. All is well. People are settling in to working remotely. And so that seems to be going good, honestly. As far as the IT staff goes, there's really no reason that we couldn't sustain this longer. But the only thing I've heard any of the guys say is, well, you know, I'm working right next to the kitchen, so I have a tendency to go in and snack a lot. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I have a little bit of an advantage there, because I don't eat all day on Wednesdays. I don't eat all day on Mondays. I eat only during the evening on Tuesdays. And I eat only during the evenings on Thursdays. So basically my whole work week, during the days, I'm not eating. And so that's easy, because I just have my coffee and have my tea and wander downstairs. It does save me time. There's no question about that. I may have mentioned that last week as well. I mean, because there's no 20-minute commute twice a day, so that's 40 minutes right there. And frankly, there's a bunch of days I don't even shower. So, you know, I've seen pictures of those stickers that say, I voted today, and someone has taken it and modified it to say, I showered today, which, you know, if you're not showered, you're not getting cleaned up, you're not got any commute, man, that buys you an hour and a half every day. And I have needed that hour and a half. My wife, she did sign off on the Mother's Day costume. And it's very interesting how things work out. I had mentioned that she got bitten by a dog 3 times, bam, 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 all in a row, and got both palm pads, thumb pads, and so she really didn't have good use of her thumbs. And so, of course, there was, you know, a lot of stuff that had to be done at the house and a lot of stuff that had to be done for her. And so I just cut back my hours consulting and, you know, we just did the thing and it worked fine. And it's interesting because last Friday when I was out and about, I got back home last Friday and I had forgotten to feed the cats before I left because I was still doing that at that point. And she said, and by the way, I did feed the cats. And I said, sweetie, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. I said, just headed out the door. She said, look, you've earned your playtime. Because it was Ellis Island Family History Day last week. She said, you earned your playtime this last week. And I told her later, I said, sweetie, I hope you know that nothing I have done in this last week and a half, has been to earn anything. She said, no, I know, you were just joking. But as part of all that, I had gotten to the point where if I was gonna do the Mother's Day costume, so I had this idea for a Mother's Day costume. I was looking for something that would be as outrageous and astounding as motherhood is. And there was no way I was gonna find up, so I gave up and punted. You know, I gave up and dropped back to something else. But this one especially sits in that intersection, because all of this gender research that I've been doing, it has exposed something that when I look back on it, I'm like, well, of course that was always there. Why didn't you think you saw that before? You know, but I didn't see it. I don't remember seeing it. And that is, and I was just talking to one of my friends at Walmart about this today, and she was going, yeah. That is that women find certain things delightful that men find disgusting. Because there's a lot of gender that is, or humor that is gender-based. And so we were talking about the fact that around the world, there is a joke that goes something along the lines of a woman saying to her husband, right, because when we get married, what's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine. And when I said that to my friend this morning, she got this big grin on her face. She said, yeah, she said, well, my husband says that about his finances all the time. And she said, you know, I don't really think it's funny, but she's got this big grin on her face. It's like, okay, yeah, sure, okay. But that's an example of gender-based humor, because men typically don't find that joke funny. So in the process of kind of stumbling around with all this gender study stuff, I've actually found a space, and it's in this visually delighting space, to visually be a visual delight to women, to where they'll grin and they'll laugh. And that space is in large part defined by cuteness, but it's sort of half defined by cuteness, and it's half defined by a knowing understanding, because women on average and in general, they embrace beauty, they embrace physical attractiveness, because it suits their purposes. But, you know, when they get home and they don't have to put on the show anymore, you know, the underwear comes off, the sweats go off, makeup comes off, they get themselves something to drink, they just veg out. You know, they don't prance around all day in makeup and high heels and all that kind of stuff, because that's just, that would be foolishness. That's not what that's for. It's a costume. It accomplishes a certain purpose. They do that purpose, and then they go home and they strip it off. So when they see a guy in costume, they know it's for a purpose as well, because women relate to that. And then especially if the costume is done in such a way that it's cute, then, you know, you delight. There's delight that arises there. Well, the problem is that definitions of cute include definitions of mechanisms that women use to look cute as well. And that's another thing that makes it funny. It's because they see that this guy is embracing stuff that they think is cute, that A, he understands what cute is, he looks halfway decent in it, and he's like wearing stuff, and he's a guy, and that's funny. And it is funny. It's juxtaposition. So the difficulty is those mechanisms are mechanisms that are used to gain attraction. So you can not only get a delight response in women, but you can also get a disgust response at the same time from men. So then you've got to weigh the two. Now you've got to decide, what are you trying to accomplish? And unfortunately, fortunately, however one say it, the Mother's Day costume has this dichotomy in spades. I mean, it is, and I truly believe in 2 weeks, if I can get this thing done, I truly believe in 2 weeks, when I walk into Walmart, the ladies that I know there will lose their minds. There will be great, uproarious laughter. And that's what I'm going for. And it's Mother's Day. And it's this celebration of this startling biochemical, physical, mental, emotional process whereby a woman carries a baby to term and births this baby and raises this. It's just a startling thing. It's startling. And there's a little bit that I have to go along with it, you know, about the differences between men and women and how they approach motherhood, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So there'll be a little few funnies along the way that are very much female-based humor. And so, you know, I got all the pieces for this, but the outfit is outrageous for a guy to wear. It's just outrageous. It's not unseemly. It's not erotic. It's not gross. It's not any of those things. It's just ridiculous. And I'm making it myself just so that I could say I made it myself and get that extra pop of reaction. But, you know, once I started making it this week, I had to revisit. I just had to revisit the base principles, the first principles. What are you trying to accomplish here? What are you going to do when you get these types of reactions? You know, it got to be locked and loaded. And I know you can say, well, you know, but you're just offending people personally. Blah, 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 blah. But this is the way I think about all this. The delight response that I see in women from this, that delight response, I think, is spirit. It's calming. It's peace. It's enjoyment. You know, it's relief from the stress of the moment, lowering of anxiety. It's calm, it is love, it is kindness, it is joy. It is spirit. It is spirit. There's no accusation in it. You know, There's no derision in it or anger or works of malice, any of that thing. It is just pure joy. So that's what I have been given the opportunity to create, pure joy. On the other hand, the other reaction that I'm causing out of this is disgust on some fronts. I rarely have men actually come up to me and talk to me about it, but I have had occasions where they have. But I'm sure, even today when I was walking through with my Star Wars leggings on, because it was pre-Star Wars day today, because there were no good holidays, so I just did a pre-Star Wars day. I'm sure there are men that just shake their head and look at me and think, what's wrong with that guy? Without a doubt, and there is a disgust response. And the disgust response is easy to understand. You know, I'm wearing leggings. And if you're not paying attention, I'm wearing leggings and some Daisy Duke shorts, short shorts, that I had put some Star Wars decals on, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, if you're not paying attention and you just get a glancing blow, it is likely that I'm going to be identified as feminine for a moment. It's not going to, it'll wear off. And then, of course, there will be interest, because there's always interest in men when feminine walks by. And then there will be the realization it's not feminine. And then there will be the disgust response. Okay? So all this stuff is going to be going on inside a man. And it can, I'm getting my mouth, inside a man, and a certain level of control can be applied to it with very simple techniques. So it's not like the man is helpless. He is choosing not to apply certain techniques that he already knows that he could use to knock down that instantaneous response in his brain. And I don't know if I've said this before, but as far as I'm concerned, when we are talking about lust, lust is not a single glance. Lust is not a second glance. Probably isn't even a third glance. Lust is a meditation on an image to the point where there is a physiological response, a preparation for insemination. It's not hard for men to tell when they are preparing to inseminate something. It's very simple. So if there is no preparation for insemination, in my opinion, there is no lust. Because what's happening in your mind is the important part, and if what is happening in your mind is true lust, it is going to cause a physical sensation. It's just that simple. So a single glance, a double glance, probably even a third glance, it's not going to hurt anything. But men have been trained that if they just have this single glance and then suddenly it's like a guy, oh, there must be something wrong with me. I must be a homosexual. And so then there's this disgust response. And so then it's like, how dare that guy dress like that to make me feel that? Well, not making anybody feel that way. Okay. People are just responding with targeting mechanisms. And then when they see that it's a guy, then that it goes away. And that is not lust. It's just a targeting mechanism response. But you can even cut down the level of that targeting mechanism response simply by making sure your sperm count's low. I mean, then that's very easy to take care of. So anyways, so what it ends up for me, is that I know from what I have learned and from what I have proven over and over and over again, that I can get certain elements put together in a costume and it will evoke delight in women. Those very same elements will evoke disgust in some men, not all men, just some men. So now I have a decision to make. And the decision that I have to make is, what will I prefer? Will I prefer a spirit response of joy, or will I prefer a flesh response of disgust? I choose to prefer women's delight over men's disgust, because I think women perform this amazingly critical piece of the world. And I think because of that, they carry certain emotional loads. And if I can bring one moment more of laughter and joy into a woman's heart, I will do that if it lies within my capabilities. So, I say all that to say, Mother's Day is going to be the ultimate test of this, because a lot of this is also my own kind of psychosocial experiment to see, because I have all these theories, and the theories project certain out and predict certain responses, and I just want to like see, okay, so if I do this, this is what I think is going to happen, and the more I do it and the more that it happens, like I'm predicting, yeah, you know what? That just shows me that at least the theory has some level of veracity because it produces. You know, and I have friends who have difficulties with it, but they're just honest with me, and that's fine. That's just fine. I've mentioned this before. I have one buddy that says, "Look, Phil, I love you, but I can't go to breakfast with you in costume. I just can't do it." And that's fine. No problem. I can make accommodation for that. I have another friend who told me at one point, he said, I see what it does in my wife. And he said, I see how she smiles. I see how she laughs. He said, but it just creeps me out a little bit inside. I know. I said, I know it does. I understand. But it makes your wife laugh. I'm willing to do it for that, even if it costs you, you know, a little bit of twinge. It's worth that. Anyways, so that's all going well. I am in the process of building that costume now. It's going to be fascinating to see because I am sewing it from scratch. This week I came across this very short, excellent little article, and it's really just a thought. It's just a thought. But it really falls within, easily within the biblical context of how to build a strong marriage. It's just a simple thought. And the writer, the name of the article is "A Therapist's Simple Rule Transformed My Marriage." It's by Jancy Dunn. And she says, "My husband and I are both writers who have worked at opposite ends of our kitchen table for the past 10 years. Just imagine that for a minute. Because we've been together virtually around the clock, we are at least somewhat equipped to deal with our new reality of lockdown living." She said, for instance, recently when we were tapping away at our computers, Tom unleashed what I call a screeze, a nerve-jangling combination of scream and sneeze. A few years ago, I would have yelled at him. I have always been the hothead in our relationship. Our fights usually follow the classic and corrosive demand withdraw, in which one person demands to deal with an issue, that would be me, and the other one shuts down and walls off. The more Tom glared stonily into his screen, the more upset I would get, escalating from pleading to shouting and swearing. Then we visited a notoriously tough therapist named Terry Real, who gave us a simple rule for getting along, and it completely changed our relationship. Real, yes, that's his real name, is famous for his exceedingly blunt language. As we nervously explained how we had become trapped in this toxic dynamic, he listened, tenting his fingers. Quote, "Here's a rule I want you to live by," he announced after an excruciating pause. "I would like you to make a commitment to what I call full respect living." The premise was simple, he said. "Nothing you do or say to each other should drop below the level of simple respect." Of course. That's good. You should love each other, as Paul said. This is not out of the article. You should love each other, as Paul said. And what is love? Love is patient. Love is kind. It is not envious. It does not boast. It does not seek its own. It does not keep any record of wrong. Love never fails. Returning to the article, she said, "I wanted to laugh, although I didn't dare." Oh, right. Of course. It's just that easy. Just treat each other with respect. back to the therapist. Quote, that doesn't mean you can't stand up for yourself, he went on, but there's a big difference between aggressive and assertive. There is no place for harshness in a loving relationship. None. If you get nothing from today other than this one thing, you may change your marriage. Then he gave us a list of behaviors that were off the table. No name calling, no swearing, no ridiculing, no shouting, no venting, no ignoring. Quote, it ends today, he pronounced, glaring at each of us in turn. So here's what's interesting. If an argument was brewing, we were to ask ourselves, is what I'm about to say or do respectful? If it isn't, he said, don't do it. The writer of the article says, it seems like an awfully high bar. But it was at least simple and easy to remember in the heat of the moment. We tried to follow our new rule. It laid bare how often we were casually disrespectful towards each other. How did it happen that I treat most people with courtesy and civility, and yet not the person I love the most? Of course, we don't always manage to practice full respective living, but the longer that we've tried to live by this tenet, and the more unusual and jarring it is when someone loses their temper. So, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm relieved that with the most recent time Tom squeezed and made me jump out of my skin, I took a deep breath instead of freaking out. I described the problem, told him how it made me feel, and explained what I would like him to do. Quote, your squeezes nearly give me a coronary, I said. I feel scattered afterwards because my concentration is broken. Please stop squeezing. Yes, in fact, you can help it. She said, in quarantine, I'm especially grateful that we know how to do this. As we all huddle together in close quarters, it is more crucial than ever to work out issues quickly and prevent festering, as with much consideration as you can muster. Sometimes I'm tempted to snap, but I silently repeat to myself something Terry Real told us during that transformative sessions. Quote, there is not one thing that harshness does that loving firmness doesn't do better. I like it. That is really good. And it's right down through the principles. Don't ping. If you let your flesh run, you will lead to destruction. If you listen to the spirit and follow, it leads to life. I have a principle called go to quiet. When you can feel that rising up in you, just go to quiet. Give yourself a beat. Don't say anything. When you feel that temperature rising, just go to quiet and wait. And then think, and then speak. And obviously, speak with loving kindness. Because we should treat everyone, especially our spouses, with loving kindness. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.